This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
When a company makes the transition from the startup phase to the expansion stage, there are invariably growing pains. Rand Fishkin is the co-founder of SEO Moz, one of the most popular search engine optimization softwares online. As he found out, finding the capital to fuel that growth is just one of those growing pains. Back in 2007, he had succeeded in securing $1.1 million, capital that quickly went to help the company scale its software, build its web index, and hire more staff. As the company continued to grow and it became clear that a second round of funding was needed, finding it wasn't so easy. It took a couple of years and several failed attempts before the company raised $18 million in April 2012. If getting the investment was hard, adapting to the changes it brought was even harder. Here's how Rand explains how things changed.
It certainly meant a lot of growth. We have grown from just under 50 people to 104 over the last 8 months since taking the large funding round in April. And that's meant a ton of complexity and challenge, but also opportunity.
That additional complexity was a natural result of rapid growth. Figuring out how to manage it and all the other aspects of transitioning from the startup phase to the expansion stage is another matter. I'm Kevin Kane, and today's LabCast, I'm joined by Rand Fishkin of SEO Moz to talk about how his wildly successful company has made this transition. Hey, Rand, how's it going today?
Very good, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate your taking the time to join us on LabCast. So I wanted to start off our conversation by asking you, you know, obviously companies that are at the startup stage face a lot of challenges, and as they grow to the expansion stage, they face even more challenges. You know, SEO Moz recently got some funding, and I want to know, is getting funding one of those challenges?
For us, it absolutely was. My gosh. So, Kevin, we started, you know, as a software company in 2007, and we raised a small round, sort of somewhere between a seed and a series A at the end of 07. But this big fundraising round is something we've been trying to raise since 08 and didn't get accomplished until 2012. And you can read lots of blog posts from me about failed efforts of the past and going up and down Sand Hill Road and getting turned down by probably 60 different venture capital firms over the last 4 years. That was a huge accomplishment for us.
Sure. And I guess I should be a little bit more clear with my question, because I know that you guys had some challenges getting the funding, but have you faced challenges now because you have the funding? Has that opened up sort of a new set of issues for the company?
Yeah, in some ways it has. I think that overall I would still say the funding has made things much, much easier and allowed us to have a lot more growth than we ordinarily could have had, and I think over the next 2 or 3 years that's going to play out in even bigger ways. But certainly there's a lot of hard things that go with that, and some of that is sort of psychological and cultural. Some of it is organizational and administrative, and there's plenty sort of all over the place as well. You know, there's additional pressure, there's additional investors, which means more people on the board of directors and more people having a voice in the company. I think it can be good and bad for us. I'd have to honestly say those years of pain and waiting were worth it, because by and large, this has been a pretty remarkable experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure the foundry group would be really happy to hear you say that. One of the things that you've talked about in some of your blog posts is this whole idea of technical debt as being one of the challenges. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so when you are starting out, especially when you're on a very tight budget, revenue is critical, features are critical, pleasing customers is absolutely critical. A lot of things have to slide. You know, you have to make compromises and choices about what's going to slide. And in the software engineering world, I can tell you what's going to slide: scalability, reliability, documentation, teaching more than one person how a particular system might work. Those are all things that you let slide because you have to. You have to make those types of compromises so that you can ship a product that people will actually use and pay you for. That creates technical debt of a huge magnitude. So when we took funding in April of last year, of 2012, that was a time when we thought, wow, this is going to help us go a lot faster. And that is true, but it's a delayed start. I would liken it to, we now have the money to take our car into the repair shop and get it fitted with a turbo engine. The problem is the installation process takes about 9 months.
Right.
So you've got to wait those 9 months for the new engine to get installed, and they have to pull out all the old parts, and you've got to, ramp up the team. I mean, it's, there's a large multitude of problems and challenges that you're trying to overcome. The personnel one is certainly a big one. If you've got a, 10-person engineering team, I think we had about 18, 19 people on our engineering team at the time that we took the funding. And then you have to grow that to what is today a 60-person engineering team. Well, recruiting is a huge challenge. Interviewing is a big challenge. Onboarding those people is a huge challenge. And it's not like the 19 engineers that we've got all got to put in their, 40 to 60-hour normal work weeks while they were doing that. That time came out of their schedule. So they're not building stuff. They're not revamping stuff. They're not launching new features. They are spending, a third to two-thirds of their time bringing new people on, creating documentation for stuff that they've written in the past so that other people can work on it, training people up, interviewing people, recruiting people, all that kind of stuff. So it's a, it's a big, big challenge. And now, of course, that's much, much easier. With a 60-person engineering team, it's easy to say, okay, well, these five folks are going to be less than active over the next few weeks because they're going to be training and onboarding and recruiting and that kind of stuff. And the rest of the team, no problem. But when it's, 10 out of 20, much bigger.
So how did you go about sort of prioritizing all this stuff? I mean, you made that analogy of the car engine in the 9 months. Lots of different pieces need to happen for that engine to get installed. How did you go about sort of assessing what those challenges were and then figuring out the right order to tackle them?
I think it was a very organic process for us, honestly. It's not, it wasn't a, hey, let's sit down and plan and know every step of the way. For us, it was almost a discovery of the problem along with a, plan for the solution, right? So we thought, okay, we want to, we want to build this huge thing and we're going to launch it in November. And this is sort of the, the plan that we've had for a while now. And then we started adding people to the team and, oh, that's challenging. Boy, recruiting's challenging. Gosh, if we don't have a technical recruiter on the phone calls initially, we're not getting the right kinds of people. So we need to do that. And oh man, if we skip out on, people on our team using their own, LinkedIn and systems and contacts, we're not getting as great candidates as we could. So we need to spend some time with that. And boy, it really helps when we, have more documentation. So we need to do that. I think it's just it's a series of, like a lot of things in the startup world, you're kind of driving along. You see a pothole, you got to fix it. You got a broken tire, you got to fix that. You don't plan for these things. You don't necessarily have the foresight to know all of the challenges you're going to face. So you fix them along the way.
So have there been any, I mean, you've kind of been alluding to it, but have there been any sort of fundamental adjustments that you've had to make both to your approach as a CEO and the company overall to continue to scale? I mean, you've talked about some of the administrative stuff and the need for more documentation and recruiting and all of that, but is there anything more fundamental about what the approach of the company or what your approach has been?
Yeah, a few. I think one of the biggest ones has become the a change in discipline and a change in attitude. And by discipline, I mean changing my mindset around speed of launch, speed to market, those kinds of things, as sort of being less important now than scalability and reliability and the ability to build with growth planning in mind. I think that's a very different type of discipline. It's certainly not something I was used to my first few years as a startup founder. It's almost antithetical to everything. Well, not everything, but to many things that you read about in books like The Lean Startup or to, the essays that you might read from a Paul Graham or what you see on Hacker News, right? Or even Facebook's, famous move fast and break things. I can tell you that when we move fast and break things, our churn rate goes up, we lose customers dramatically, and our customers actually like the features that we have. And they'd much prefer that those didn't break and new stuff didn't break than us launching new stuff. And you can see that in our numbers every time. So, for example, we had a bunch of stuff break in September. Our October growth rate was, I think, 1/6 the growth rate of our September growth rate because of that. You know, we lost a tremendous number of customers because we were down for a couple of weeks because we moved fast and broke things. So it's weird. You know, you're almost bucking the trend with a lot of that stuff. And then I think getting process-driven. So finding a repeatable, scalable methodology for everything that you do inside the company, for recruiting, for onboarding, for financial processing, for getting monthly closes, for figuring out why AEP's payroll system sucks and moving off to something else, for you know, whatever it is, you're trying to find that repeatable and scalable process instead of just plugging the holes one by one.
And do those sort of lessons that you've learned for your company really also apply to you as a leader? I mean, some of them sounded like they do more than others, but is there anything that sort of fundamentally shifted in your sort of approach?
I think so a few things that I found. One is as your team scales, as the company gets a lot bigger and the team scales, I've tried really hard to maintain lots of one-on-one connections with individuals, which I don't know if, I'm not sure. It's a tough balance, but I think it's the right thing to do, at least for us. So I have probably about 40%, 50% of my week, of my working hours, is set aside for one-on-ones with team members all across the organization. I'll sit down with an engineer who's working on a new product. I'll sit down with a product person who's doing some UX and wireframing. I'll sit down with one of our designers for, you know, and see what they're up to. I'll talk to some managers. It's great. You know, it's a it lets me feel like I'm still a part of the the ground floor and the operations, and that I can see and feel and hear into the details as much as possible, and that I don't become too disconnected. But it's also, I can't tell you how different it is from maker mode. Right, I'm not producing things. I'm not, that's not a time when I'm sort of setting strategy and vision, or coming up with new great ideas, or evangelizing out to the marketplace. But it is a time when I can help take all of the stuff that I've learned over the last few years and bring that back to the team, and also make people feel good and heard and listened to, which I think is very important.
So is there any specific advice that you would offer other founders who are making this transition and seeing their companies grow about how they could be really successful? Or are there any qualities you would say that, you know, they need to possess?
You need to have a lot of patience. Absolutely need a lot of patience, which is something that startup founders think that they're not supposed to have. and in some cases, I suppose it could be detrimental too. But, the mid-stage and the growth stage is different from the early stage. In that respect, I'd also say, you know, one of the things that's a little weird that I've noticed, and this has been true even for the past couple of years, but maybe even a little before we got the funding, which is that positivity and optimism are extremely powerful weapons. And I think far too often myself and many other founders I know don't wield them, and in fact use the opposite, use criticism and negativity to try and drive a lot of actions inside of startups and on teams. So, you know, for example, like, this product isn't good enough, damn it. We need to get this stuff better. This, you know, here's these 10 things that are wrong. Don't let this happen again. It's up to us to make this kind of thing happen. That sort of negative reinforcement and feedback is something I see a lot in companies of all kinds, but startups are certainly one of them. And one of the things that I've noticed about that is it works short term, but it burns people out and it loses team members. And replacing someone on the team is much, much harder. So maybe a good example might be, let's say you've got, programmer Z on your team. And this person is very, very, very talented, knows sort of your code base inside and out, is, putting in 50, 60-hour weeks, and it's just remarkable. It is far, far easier to make that person happy long-term, give them, whatever it is that you need to do, the a little longer vacation time, make their work less stressful over time, surround them with good people, make them feel great about their job, than it is to lose that person due to burnout and try to add two or three more folks to come in and function. And I see a lot of teams do that. So that would be my bias. I'd say try and keep up that optimism and that positivity, create a great work environment, because talent is where almost all of your progress comes from as you get bigger. You know, you, the founder, are no longer sort of this, 10x producer who can move the needle all by yourself. Once you get to a bigger team, it has to be a great team.
So you talk about having this great culture, and I want to just touch on that for a minute more, because I know another thing that you kind of had alluded to before is that, you know, once you get funding, things slow down, at least temporarily. So how do you create a great culture, and particularly a culture of innovation, when that happens? What has your strategy been, and how have you kind of, propelling that in your organization?
Well, it's something that we started very early on. I think it was became a personal passion, and that turned it into an internal passion. It's something that our our executive team is really very, very interested in and focused on. But sort of an interesting one. I worry about what culture means to different people and how they interpret that. And I think there are a lot of great ways to build and leverage and use company culture. And then there are some detrimental ones when you essentially are calling some features or some environments or some fun benefits company culture, when in fact culture is so much deeper than that. That is a tough one. It's hard to say what how to extend how to build a great culture if it's not something you're already internally, intrinsically passionate about.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's something that you obviously are very passionate about in your organization. So I think most of the people that we would talk to at SEOMOS would feel that way.
Yeah. Certainly today, I mean, this has been something that we've hired for specifically, and something that we, still on occasion have to let someone go because of a, cultural problem. And that's almost always the case. What's been one of the interesting things that we've done purposely as a team, as we've grown, is, we've had relatively low, in fact, pretty darn low turnover on the team in terms of employees over the last year and a half. And, the only real cases are when folks are sort of not a culture match or taking actions that are really against our core values, those types of things. And we've been able to work with a lot of people who've, I guess I would say, struggled on their, day-to-day work or on tasks, and spent a lot of time doing education and training and investing in people or moving them to different roles if there's something they're more passionate about. And that's worked out terrifically well. I think that, the team can almost feel it that, I'm not gonna get into huge trouble or, get fired or let go if I'm having a challenge with a project and I need more help on it. But I am gonna, be in big trouble if I'm not, TAGV, which is our core values.
Well, Rand, I really appreciate your taking the time to tell us and all of our listeners today about the experiences at SEO Miles and how things have been going for you and the organization as you continue to scale and expand. Before I let you go, is there anywhere you would like readers to go to get more information? I mean, your blog, you're sort of prolific and everywhere. So is there anywhere in particular you'd like to send people?
On my personal blog, which is moz.com/Rand, I write about a lot of this kind of stuff, the technical debt issues, the fundraising, the building company culture, all that kind of stuff. So certainly if you're interested in those things, go check it out. That'd be great.
Great. Thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.